This podcast is brought to you compliments of Kaspersky Lab, protecting more than 300 million systems worldwide against internet threats.
Okay, welcome to the Threat Post News Wrap podcast. It was kind of an interesting week. I just got back from New York last night. I was down there for the OWASP AppSec USA conference, which was really good. A lot of people down there, some good talks. But Mike, it seems like I missed a whole lot of interesting stuff while I was gone. I was kind of, you know how when you go to those conferences, you're in like a black hole. You don't pay attention to anything else that's going on aside.
Yeah, you get kind of locked into what's going on.
Absolutely.
The whole world doesn't exist for a few days, which can be good.
Yeah, it can actually. I didn't have to pay attention to Bitcoin values or, you know, the internet being rerouted through like Iceland or whatever happened there.
That's what happened.
Yeah, I was just sort of catching up on that this morning when I was like going back and reading through Twitter stuff. And I saw Chris Hoff and a couple other people commenting on it. And I know you wrote about what exactly was the story there?
So I guess it happened a couple of times this year, the first one in February, but basically somebody was using route injection in TAX. And I'm not exactly clear on everything that entails, but basically they were able to redirect or add hops to internet traffic. And in one case, there are routes that traffic takes that are normal, you know, going through DC, London, Paris, back to New York. And that seems to be kind of just the way the internet works. But these guys, whoever was doing it, was able to inject some additional hops and send traffic through Belarus and Moscow and Minsk and a couple of other locations that raised some flags for this company, Renesas, that does some, I guess, internet intelligence is what they call it.
Yeah.
So it kind of alerted them, and they watched it, and they detected it, I guess, on 60 different days. There were a bunch of IP address blocks that were behaving this way. And, you know, they're not entirely sure who was on the other end and what they were doing with it, but they weren't stealing the traffic. They were monitoring it, observing it, analyzing it for some period of time, and then sending it back to their destination. So there wasn't any noticeable hiccup in latency, or, you know, there wasn't a slowdown in messages or traffic or searches or anything like that and arriving back to their source or destination. So it really didn't cause any huge blips. But it's really weird, and it sounds pretty scary if somebody can, access this kind of infrastructure and send traffic wherever they feel like it.
Yeah. I've seen those kind of attacks before on BGP routing, where people just advertise, you know, a false route for somebody else, so they end up getting a ton of traffic routed through their autonomous system rather than the other way, you know, the way it should be, which, you know, that sounds like what was going on here. But sometimes
it
happens.
Kind of a glorified man in the middle situation is what it sounded like.
That's what I was going to say. Like, sometimes these things have happened by accident, where, you know, somebody just advertises the wrong route and something goes haywire. But this sounds like a large scale man in the middle attack.
It definitely sounds intentional. I mean, it doesn't sound accidental. And, you know, they were noticing some high value traffic going through there, coming out of big banks or government agencies here in the US. And again, they don't know what was happening to it on the other side. I mean, you know, it was routing through these other locations, and there was definitely the opportunity to kind of inspect it as it was going along, and, you know,
yeah,
keep the good stuff, send the rest of it back, kind of thing. And that's apparently what was happening. And it was happening enough where these guys noticed it and kept an eye on it.
But they didn't. Did they alert anybody or say anything at the time, or were they just sort of watching the attack happen?
They told me they alerted a lot of the government agencies and financial institutions. There was also a large VoIP provider that they didn't name that they also got in touch with. So, you know, they were seeing some serious traffic moving, and they did notify these guys. And apparently, you know, they're putting some measures in place in terms of, you know, to notice this stuff on their logs and what to look for and how to mitigate it.
That doesn't sound, that sounds bad.
It does sound bad. It does sound bad. I mean, they were routing stuff through Iceland, which I apparently in the second case, that was the real red flag. There were the number of events that were going through this Icelandic provider you know, or like 20 times the normal traffic that they would normally see. So that kind of triggered a lot of alarms in that particular attack. And that's what caused them to look a little deeper. But, you know, they were seeing traffic from all over the world go to this ISP in Belarus and back to their destination. Hmm. And that wasn't part of the normal hop.
Right, right. Yeah, that's weird. That's those things, as I said, have happened before, and they're always – it's usually like for a short time though. You know, you're talking about like a few minutes or hours at most,
right?
Before, you know, somebody notices it. But then it takes time for – once they change it back, for those changes to sort of propagate back through the DNS system or whatever.
Yeah. And I guess the rough part too is that it's not necessarily a vulnerability. I mean, this is – I guess it's – part of the functionality, part of the way that this stuff's built to work. And basically the, you know, the long-term mitigation is either, you know, signing these routes cryptographically, which is, I can't imagine the nightmare that might be to put that in place and the expense.
Yeah. I mean, we have enough trouble just encrypting, like, you know, online banking sessions,
right?
Things like that.
Right. And I guess there are things that ISPs can do in terms of filtering and, you know, preventing route spoofing or these injection attacks, but again, it might not be in their best interest from a business point to do that, from a business point of view. So there's a lot of stuff conspiring against this, and you know, it looks like it can keep happening. And
oh yeah,
it's just these guys want.
Yeah, I think so. But I feel like the, you know, larger companies that are, you know, run decent sized autonomous systems understand that this can happen and have things in place to catch it if it does. But this is weird that nobody, no flags were thrown at the time, you know, nobody sort of raised their hand and said, hey, there's something totally crazy going on here. And, you know, but I mean, that's, it's the internet. Weird things happen. Yeah. All the time. So one of the things that I thought was interesting at this, this conference in New York was this talk that there was two different ones that I really enjoyed. One was this talk that Josh Corman and Nick Prococo gave about this this thing that I guess they kind of started talking about at DEF CON over the summer, this sort of idea of, like, you know, the cavalry is not coming. Like, there's nobody coming to fix all these problems on the internet. There's nobody mm-hmm. coming to you know, protect security researchers from like, you know, bad prosecutions and all these things that everybody is worried about for a long time. And so their idea was to start this thing, you know, kind of We Are the Cavalry, and try and get security researchers focused not so much on finding, like, you know, the next bug in Android or the next buffer overflow in Chrome or something like that, but right. trying to find, you know, or trying to raise awareness really about security issues with, you know, embedded devices, things like medical devices, get lobbying started to get, you know, the FDA and the FCC and Congress aware of these issues, you know, problems with like onboard computers in cars, what the safety concerns are, kind of the whole, you know, the overarching idea is doing security for the public good rather than just for, you know, your own benefit or to, you know, impress your friends, which, you know, I've heard people talk about in various pieces of that over the years, I guess, but never seen a coherent effort like this to try and actually organize people and get them directed in one place, in one way, and get all these, everybody's talents sort of going in that way.
Yeah, it's been a pretty interesting time. I wrote kind of a column opinion piece a week or 10 days ago about kind of on these lines of the security community kind of, you know, turning into a bunch of little activists and finally doing something for the greater good.
Yep.
From, you know, whatever is in their own little bubble. And this is just another example of it. I mean, this Internet of Things is really starting to spike, and everything is internet enabled. Everything's got an embedded computer in it. And, you know, if there's a problem, there's really no way to patch this stuff without kind of a recall,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, complicates things tremendously and kind of forces you to consider security from the start, if that's a priority. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's not. And it's great to see, you know, people who are influential, people who are thinkers, and, you know a lot of people that, you know, they can maybe make a difference from the outset with something like this. So it's pretty cool to see it.
Yeah, I hope so. Cause it, you know, I did a podcast with a bunch of those guys yesterday afternoon before I left. And, one of the things that they talked about, and I talked to Josh Corman, who's, in, you know, sort of helping get this thing rolling, was, you know, a lot of the people in the security community are very, very worried about what other people think of them, like what they're, you know, they're concerned what their security peers are going to say about this research or this project that they're working on, or, you know, like most people are. People, you know, want to be liked and they want to be respected for what they do. And he said, you know, we're getting a lot of flack from people for this for various reasons. They think it's sort of a waste of time. They think, you know, we should be working on other problems and, you know, enough of this kind of like charity type stuff. And, you know, his point was, I don't really give a crap what other people say about this. It's something that we want to do. We think it's good for the general public, you know, raising security awareness. How can that be a bad thing? You know, getting the broader audience aware of what these problems are, where, you know, I'm sure if you, you know, you have an uncle or somebody that has a pacemaker and you went and asked him like, hey, do you think that I could reach that thing from the internet or from, you know, my Bluetooth enabled phone? He'd be like, what are you talking about? You know, there's no, of course not. It's just a little thing that helps my heart beat in the right rhythm.
Right.
But, you know, the point is like a lot of these things have Bluetooth connectivity, which they don't need, or, you know, may have security vulnerabilities built in, you know, things like industrial control systems as well. Like, you know, these things that are on like 10-year patch cycles, if at all.
Right.
You know, I really like the idea. I'm going to be fascinated to see how it goes.
Yeah.
Because the interesting thing to me is that some of the people that I thought might be kind of, you know, hostile towards it are getting involved. You know, like some of the big researchers in the industry are getting involved with it. So,
But that certainly helps the cause. I mean, wasn't it Dick Cheney too, who went on 60 Minutes recently and said that they had to turn off some kind of wireless component in his pacemaker?
Yes.
Just as a national security threat, which was fascinating. And I mean, you know, that's the kind of thing that, you know, that people don't think about until after it happens. And I mean, what if somebody had gotten to him that way? And, you know, then the uproar becomes, well, why didn't we think of this ahead of time? Why didn't somebody do it? This, you know, think about this problem before it came to this point. And, you know, that's what these guys are doing. And,
yeah,
you know, the fact that you've got guys like Corman or, you know, Charlie Miller and Chris Valasek, hacking a car at DEF CON and Black Hat. Yeah. You know, kind of funny, kind of silly, but it's a real problem. And,
oh yeah,
I don't want my brakes locking up on the highway because somebody hits the wrong button in a data center somewhere.
Right. And, or I don't want, you know, some guy driving the lane next to me to be able to control my steering or, right, you know, something like that. Which again, if you ask anybody, you know, they'd be like, it's not that kind of computer, but yeah, it is.
It is that kind of computer.
It's exactly that kind of computer. It's connected.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing too. It's, you know, everybody's notion of a computer has got to change. Everybody's got a smartphone, and they get that. But, you know, it doesn't have to have a monitor and a keyboard to be a computer. And, you know, and at least for the consumer end of things, people, you know, need to start having that a different perspective on what computing is and what can happen. And,
oh, no doubt.
You know, absolutely, people shine a light on it now. It's definitely a good thing.
Yeah. And, you know, Josh and those guys are trying to get, you know, reporters involved, lobbyists, as I said. They're trying to get, you know, folks that are working on the software projects at, you know, at automakers or at the device companies or, you know, wherever it happens to be to get involved as well. So they're not just kind of asking their friends in the research community to help. They're trying to get a whole bunch of a diverse set of talents involved in this thing, which I think is the right approach. You know, if you just have the same usual suspects trying to figure this out, then you're probably going to get the same results that we've been getting.
Right. And, you know, that's the knock against the security, kind of this insulated bubble, this echo chamber that they've created for themselves among researchers and people. And that definitely needs to stop. That needs to go away. That they need to break free of that. And draw in people who aren't security professionals.
Yeah, no question. Because, I mean, some of these guys are, you know, as brilliant as, you know, any given researcher might be, maybe his strength isn't going to talk to somebody at the FDA and explaining what these problems are and what, how they could be fixed. You know, that's why lobbyists exist. That's,
right.
You know, that's why there's, you know, billions of dollars changing hands on K Street in Washington. That industry didn't happen by accident. You know, those people know what they're doing, so they know who to go talk to and that sort of thing. So, they're going to be, I think, you know, Josh said that they're going to be sort of evolving this and giving, you know, various versions of this talk at, I think they're going to Blue Hat at Microsoft in a couple of weeks and, other cons at the beginning of next year to sort of get the word out and get people involved. So, it'll be fun to watch and see how they do.
Yeah, I agree.
So the other, really interesting talk I saw on, I think it was the first day of the conference was, this one that, Robert Hansen, who a lot of people know as RSnake, security researcher, gave on, it was about browser security, but it was sort of split into two pieces. One was talking about, sort of the way that like what you need to do in order to surf the web, with a modern browser, how to surf the web, like, not being tracked, you know, with everything disabled, you know, all the security plugins you want, all the privacy things turned on, and, you know, basically the way that he surfs the web. And he showed a screenshot, like, after he went through all this and said, like, you know, turn this on, do this, you know, don't download that, all that kind of stuff that we're always telling people. And he showed a screenshot of what CNN looks like their homepage, if you do all this, and it's just like 8 links in a column in the center of the page. Like there's no visuals, there's no ads, which is nice, but there's literally nothing on the page. No active content, nothing. Just like 8 links to whatever stories are on the front page, and that's it.
It's 1991 again. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. It's like Alta Vista, you know, and he was like, this is what you would need to do. And I'm not recommending that you do that because it's terrible. But his larger point was you shouldn't have to do all that stuff. Like the way that the anti-tracking stuff, the ad blocking stuff, all that kind of stuff works now is broken. And his point was, you know, do not track was kind of a farce in his words. He doesn't think it works at all because, you know, we talked later and he was like, you know, I think it was a big head fake from the ad industry and the browser manufacturers to sort of buy time because they're making, you know, about $100 billion in revenue every year in online ads. You know, $40 billion of that goes to Google alone. So any time that they can sort of delay and, you know, keep the online ad thing rolling is good for them. So they sort of hem and haw about do not track, then eventually agree to support it. But, you know, it's turned off by default. And even when you do turn it on, the people that you send that header to, there's no obligation on their end to actually respect it. They can ignore it outright if they feel like it. Like there's no, you know, there's no regulation that says Amazon or whoever has to honor that do not track header.
Right.
It's just it's almost like a feel good thing for consumers to be like, oh, I just told the internet not to track me by clicking this radio button. When in fact, all you did was, you know, send an HTTP header, which their web server can look at and be like, oh, that's cute. And just go on about their merry way.
Yeah. It's kind of like the lock.
Oh yeah, the old lock. Yes,
the old lock. You know, it doesn't mean a heck of a lot most of the time. Yeah, I mean, we've covered do not track. I think it gives me a headache, like Bitcoin does now. It's just it's confusing, and at the end of the day, anything that can be ignored, you know, isn't worth its weight in salt anyway. So it doesn't really matter.
No, especially when there's that much money involved. I mean,
right.
I don't think people understand. Like, I don't think I've ever clicked on a web ad in my life. Like in 20 years of being on the internet, I don't think I've ever clicked on one, but that's not
on purpose.
No, definitely not on purpose. But you know, the point is these display ads are being shown to you and, you know, in your email, on every web page, if you don't have good, you know, if you don't know how to block them well, and clearly they're making money for somebody.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the tracking stuff is it's gold to them. They, you know, they build these massive lists and spam you to death or whatever their marketing strategy is. And like you said, you know, Google alone makes $40 billion a year doing this. And, you know, why should they agree from a business point of view to, you know, allow any kind of software interference in their business plan? And, you know, Arsenic's probably right. It's just a stall tactic, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, and now I think it's essentially abandoned. Like, I don't know what else is going to happen with it, but the online ad industry associations, they don't have any agreement on it. Like, they haven't, you know, said, okay, we're going to direct everybody to support this and honor these headers or anything like that. And there's so many other ways to track people across the web, you know, whether it's legitimately or maliciously, that I don't think it really matters much anyway.
Yeah, I think it's buried in some standards body and, you know, they're agreeing on who's going to turn what on by default and what can be ignored and what can't and, you know, what browser it's installed in, what version. It's just a lot of back and forth. And, you know, that's the way these standards bodies work. They hem and haw and argue for years sometimes, and eventually things get dropped or forgotten and
yeah,
back to square one. And
it failed as an effort to get it as a standard in the W3C.
Right.
And then I think they just sort of, you know, I remember the FTC coming out with some statements maybe last year saying, we recommend this as, you know, something that consumers should use. But that was about it. Like, there's no, you know, there's no way of enforcing it. There's no regulation. So,
and you can't expect, you know, your average consumer to go digging through their preferences or their settings in their browser and understanding, you know, browser ease in terms of what DNT means. And
no,
understanding that, yeah, you can ask them not to track you, but it doesn't mean that they won't.
No, well, that was the other thing.
Fine print.
He showed in each of the major browsers, he showed how many clicks it takes to actually turn it on.
Right.
And in some cases, it's like seven. Like, you know, you have to click through like four different options menus to turn it on. And he also showed exactly what happens when you turn it on, like what gets sent and what doesn't get sent.
Mm-hmm.
So like if you have it turned off, it just doesn't send any signal to the, you know, to the websites you visit, meaning it doesn't display any preference. And if you turn it on, it just says, you know, do not track me. But again, it doesn't. So what? It's, you know, it doesn't have any real teeth behind it, unfortunately.
Right. It probably doesn't mention that setting can be ignored.
Oh, no, of course not. No, yeah. I mean, if you go and look at Chrome or Firefox or whatever, no, it doesn't tell you that at all. It just says, you know, if you click this button, it sends a signal to advertisers that you don't want to be tracked across the web or whatever the wording is, which sounds great. But, you know, what general consumer who isn't really aware of what's going on is going to go and look it up and read through all the documentation and be like, wait, nobody has to pay any attention to this?
Right. They're not. Yeah, exactly. They're not.
Yeah, no, not at all. I mean, it's like a speed limit that, you know, you don't actually have to follow. It's just a suggestion.
Right.
You know, like, we'd really like you to go 45 here, but if you go 120, we're not going to do anything about it.
Accidents happen.
You're right. Exactly. Weird things happen on the internet. So, all right. Did we miss anything? Was there any other big stories that we should have hit?
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Compliments of Kaspersky Lab, a world leader in internet threat protection for small, medium, and large enterprises. Visit Kaspersky.com for more information about their line of premium protection solutions.